What are you talking about?
Joseph stared at Anton Mirabeau in surprise.
Those men have no right to that gold.
Mirabeau thumped a fist against his buckskin-clad chest.
It belongs to the Métis.
Joseph waved a hand toward the crated weapons.
We gave it to them in return for those Gatling guns. You know that, Anton.
And you know how hard we worked for it. You know the price that was paid.
Joseph scowled. He knew, all right. Shooting had broken out during several of those robberies. Friends of his had died, gunned down by the law. Almost as bad, he had to live with the fact that innocent people also died. But such tragedies happened before, and no doubt would happen again before his people finally achieved their freedom, he reminded himself. There was a price to be paid for everything in this world.
What are you suggesting? That we go after them and steal the gold back from them?
Exactly.
What about honor?
They are Americans.
Joseph looked over at his sister. Charlotte was chewing her bottom lip worriedly. He knew the prospect of more violence bothered her, too. But he also knew she didn't like to go against what Mirabeau wanted. Like everyone else, she still had the idea in her head that one day he would be her husband.
There's nothing I can do to stop you, is there?
No.
Mirabeau turned to the other men.
Mount up! They will have gotten far enough ahead of us by now. We'll circle around in front of them and set up an ambush. Wolverine Rock would be a good place.
Several of the men nodded in agreement. They swung up into their saddles. Mirabeau turned back to Joseph and Charlotte.
The two of you can follow us and bring the mules and the guns.
From the sound of Mirabeau's voice, Joseph was no longer in charge of this mission. Injured pride welled up inside him, but he forced it down.
You don't want us to come along with you?
Someone has to bring the guns along.
Mirabeau was trying to sound reasonable, but Joseph knew the real reason for the decision. Mirabeau no longer fully trusted him. He was afraid Joseph would do something to ruin his plan.
Fine. Go. Get more blood on your hands. It won't be the last, will it?
Mirabeau nodded and waved his companions into action. They headed down the valley, riding hard. They would have to set a fast pace in order to reach Wolverine Rock ahead of the American outlaws. Fortunately for the Métis, this was their homeland. Mirabeau had hunted and trapped all over these mountains. He knew all the shortcuts.
Oh, this could turn out badly, Joseph. I wish Anton were not so stubborn.
But he is, and we cannot change him.
Joseph began gathering up the reins of the pack mules. The Gatling gun that had been used earlier had been disassembled and returned to its crate. All the crates had been closed up and lashed to the animals. He waited until Charlotte had climbed into the saddle of her horse and then handed some of the reins to her. He took the others. They started down the valley, leading the mules. Their pace was much slower than that of Mirabeau and the other men. Joseph supposed that when they were done with their ambush, when they had finished killing the Americans and stealing back the chests of gold, they would either wait at Wolverine Rock or return for him and Charlotte. There was nothing to say, so they rode in silence. The sun moved toward its zenith. It was almost midday, Joseph judged, when the sound of gunshots in the distance came to his ears. Charlotte heard them too.
Oh, I pray that Anton is all right.
Sadly, Joseph was no longer certain he shared that sentiment. Joe Palmer gave in to his curiosity.
Say, exactly how much are those gold bars worth anyway?
Lundy grinned over at him as they rode side by side.
Yeah, trying to figure out what your share's gonna be, Joe?
Seems like that would be an important thing to know.
Well, you know the same as I do that it all depends on how much you get for it. There's not a set price.
You're bound to have a pretty good idea, though.
It ought to be in the neighborhood of $50,000.
That's a lot of money. 10 grand apiece since there's only 5 of us left.
Hold on a minute. You're not figuring the same way I am.
What do you mean?
Jericho and I were taking 30%.
Jericho's dead.
I don't change anything. I'm still taking 15,000.
The tone of his voice made it clear that Palmer, or anyone else, was going to have plenty of trouble on his hands if that decision was challenged.
All right, so that leaves 35 grand to split 4 ways.
You weren't in on the whole deal. 5 for you, 10 each for the other fellas.
Palmer had to swallow an angry curse. He glanced over his shoulder at the other three outlaws. He didn't know any of them personally, but he recognized the wolf-like intensity with which they were watching him. They were listening to the conversation with great interest.
You know what?
Palmer recognized the razor-thin line he was walking.
That sounds mighty fair to me, Owen. I'll be just fine with that split.
Good, because that's the way it's gonna be.
The valley had narrowed down as they headed east. Rugged, snow-capped peaks still loomed to the north and south. But ahead of them, Palmer could see a gap where the trail sloped down to the flats. They would still have to ride through some foothills, but they were about to leave the mountains at last. A large rock squatted on the left side of the trail. Something about it struck Palmer as familiar, and after a moment he realized what it was. The rock generally had a rounded shape, but it thrust out sharply toward the trail, like an animal's snout, and on top of it were two knobs that looked like ears. Most of the rock was dark in color, but a lighter band encircled it.
Looks like a wolverine.
What?
That big rock up yonder looks like a wolverine's head.
Yeah, I get
it. A fraction of a second later, one of the men riding behind them let out a pained grunt. Palmer whipped his head around in time to see the man topple out of the saddle with a black, red-rimmed hole in the center of his forehead where the bullet had struck him.
Move!
Lundy kicked his horse into a run.
Somebody's shooting at us!
That seemed pretty obvious to Palmer.
Cha!
Palmer urged his animal into a gallop. Lundy had gone to the left, so Palmer went to the right. When you were under attack, it wasn't smart to bunch up. Make your enemies split their fire. The other two outlaws scattered as well. Palmer saw a cloud of powder smoke rising over the odd-shaped rock. Some bastards had gotten up there and set up an ambush for them. Palmer had a pretty good idea who they were, too. Those damn half-breeds were trying a double cross. He rode swiftly toward some trees. His horse suddenly lurched underneath him. Palmer kicked his feet out of the stirrups and let go of the reins. He was thrown clear as the horse fell, but after sailing through the air for a few feet, he slammed into the ground. Palmer came to, he judged, an hour later. He waited, wondering if the shooters remained. At hearing nothing but wind and birds for a time, he heaved himself up near the horse's carcass. Nobody shot at him. He climbed laboriously to his feet and staggered toward the two bodies he could see. They belonged to a couple of Lundy's men. Palmer had never learned their names. He didn't give a damn about that, either. He spotted another body lying at the edge of the trees. When he hurried over to it, he saw it was the third member of Lundy's gang. This man was as dead as the other two. Sure enough, there was no sign of the pack horse carrying the gold as far as the eye could see. The saddle horses had stampeded and were gone, too.
Now what the hell am I gonna do? What?
The sound made Palmer twist around and reach for his gun. His fingers found only empty air where the butt of the revolver should have been. Shocked, he looked down and saw that the holster was empty. The gun must have fallen out when he was thrown from the falling horse. His rifle was still in the saddle boot strapped to the carcass. He had been so stunned by crashing to the ground that he hadn't been thinking straight. Otherwise, he never would have gone wandering around this killing ground without any weapons, except for a small knife hidden under his coat. The moan sounded again from somewhere in the trees. The timber grew so thickly that Palmer couldn't see very far into the woods. He glanced at the horse and wondered if he could run out there and get his rifle. If he did, he would be turning his back to whoever was hidden in the trees, making him a perfect target. But it was only one logical person it could be, he told himself. When he heard a strangled cough, he knew he had to risk it.
Owen? Owen, is that you? Are you hurt?
The voice that responded was so low and weak that at first Palmer wasn't even sure if he had heard anything. Then it came again, and he knew.
Joe. Joe. I need help. I've been shot.
I'm coming. Speak up. Where are you?
Here.
Palmer followed the voice into the shadows under the trees. A moment later, he found Lundy propped up against one of the trunks. His hat was gone. Lundy had a gun in his hand, but that hand lay in his lap as if it was too heavy for him to lift. Palmer supposed it was, and he could see why. Lundy was weak from all the blood he'd lost. The right side of his shirt was soaked with it. Palmer knelt beside him.
How bad are you hit, Owen?
I don't know. I just know it hurts like hell.
I thought you'd gotten away clean.
Palmer carefully moved aside the blood-soaked shirt in an attempt to see the wound in Lundy's side.
I thought I had to. One of the sons of bitches winged me just as I got to the trees. I fell off my horse. I don't know where the bastard ran off to.
Neither do I. All the horses are gone except for mine, and he's dead.
What about the pack horse?
Gone, too. I'd be willing to bet those bushwhackers took it.
Oh, the gold!
Yeah.
He had the hole in Lundy's side uncovered by now. The bullet had torn through the outlaw's flesh, but the wound didn't appear to be too deep. Palmer reached around behind Lundy and brought his hand back with crimson smeared on the fingers.
Oh, what in blazes are you doing?
Checking for an exit wound. It's there. The bullet went clear through, Owen. That's good.
Yeah, it is.
You've lost quite a bit of blood, and the shock of being hit by that bullet has knocked you for a loop. But I reckon you're gonna be all right. I'll clean the wound and bandage it up, and you'll be fine. As long as you don't get blood poisoning and fester to death.
Palmer didn't share his thoughts. All he could do was patch up the wound the best he could.
Fine. Hell. We're out here, set afoot, and our gold's gone.
Yeah. But as long as we're alive, we've still got a chance of finding those sons of bitches who stole it and getting it back. And that's exactly what we're gonna do.
Reb Russell's horse was a big, good-looking sorrel, and he rode it well. Not surprising, since he had won saddle bronc riding competitions. At least, according to Reb, he had won those contests. They had no way of knowing if that was actually true, Frank mused, as he rode along with the others, heading east toward the edge of the mountains. They rode four abreast, with him and Salty on the ends, and Meg and Reb in the middle. Meg seemed quite interested in what Reb had to say, and prompted him to talk more about his rodeo experiences. As it happened, Frank had been down in Pecos, Texas, a number of years earlier, when the first official rodeo took place there. It had been quite a spectacle, with cowboys riding in from ranches all over West Texas to test their skills against each other. The contests were the same sort of things they did in their everyday work, roping, riding, throwing steers so they could be branded. But when you added spectators and an air of competition, it became something quite different from a chore. The practice spread, and now there were rodeos all over the place, some fancy and some just simple get-togethers. But Reb Russell evidently made a practice of traveling from one to the next, earning his living from the prize money he won, rather than working as a regular hand on any of the ranches. Something about that didn't seem right to Frank. He had a hunch that Russell could have been a top hand if he'd wanted to, only the young man didn't have any appetite for that much hard work. But how Reb Russell lived his life was none of his business, Frank reminded himself.
Those fellas who had the Gatling gun, you didn't get a good look at them?
No, we were too busy ducking all those bullets that were flying around.
And there was a whole heap of them. I never heard so many shots so close together.
Yeah, a Gatling gun will spit out a lot of bullets in a hurry. Or at least that's what I've heard. I never actually saw one of the contraptions until today.
You probably saw the men who had it better than we did. You were up on the rim rock taking pot shots at the ones trying to shoot it at the canyon.
Just look like regular hard cases to me. Well, except for an hombre who was wearing one of those Eastern dude hats.
Dude hats?
Yeah, you know.
Reb made a circular motion over his head.
One of those derbies.
Palmer!
So you do know one of the varmints?
Maybe. We've been on the trail of an hombre who started out as a crook somewhere back east before coming to Colorado and throwing in with an owl hoot named Soapy Smith. They wound up going to Alaska and taking over a town there called Skagway. They stole some of Salty's money.
No, they stole all my money. The dab blasted skunks. Palmer's likely the only one of the bunch left. We're gonna try to get the dinero back from him if we can ever catch up to him. Seems like we've already chased him halfway across Canada and back.
If Palmer's the only one left, who are those other fellas he's with, the ones with the Gatling gun?
Now that we don't know. But a former part of his told us that Palmer's acquainted with some bad men who've been raising hell up here north of the border. Could be he met up with them.
Must be. Seems like there's a lot going on up here in these mountains.
Yeah, it does.
Late in the morning, they heard shots up ahead somewhere. Frank reined in, and the others followed suit. Most of the reports were the sharp whip cracks of rifles, but there were a few heavier booms from handguns as well.
Some sort of fracas going on.
No Gatling gun, though. Maybe it's not the same bunch.
Meg looked over at Frank.
We're going to find out what it's about, aren't we?
It may mean riding right into trouble.
She gave him a cocksure grin.
Wouldn't be the first time, would it?
She had a point there. But he was getting tired of risking her life over and over again.
You and Salty stay here. Reb, come with me. We'll see what we can find out.
Reb looked a little surprised that Frank was giving him orders, but he didn't argue the point.
Sure, Frank.
Salty looked as if he was going to argue, and so did Meg. Frank forestalled their protest with a hard look. He nodded to Reb.
Come on.
They heeled their mounts into a fast trot that left Salty and Meg behind. Once Salty thought about it, he would realize that Frank hadn't wanted to drag Meg along into danger yet again, and he also didn't want to leave her there alone with Reb Russell. The shooting died away before they had covered half a mile.
Sounds like the battle's over.
For now.
That usually means one side or the other's had all the fat knocked out of it and has given up.
Or else everybody on one side is dead. You sure you want to get mixed up in this?
You bet I do. This whole mess has got me plumb curious.
A short time later, Frank spotted something on the ground up ahead and reined in as he realized that the dark shape was a fallen horse.
Somebody over there, too.
Frank looked and saw the bodies sprawled on the ground. Victims of the shooting they had heard, no doubt. He drew his Colt and sent his horse ahead at a careful walk. Reb slid his ivory-handled revolver from its holster as well. The way the young man handled the gun told Frank he probably knew how to use it, too. They came to the first body.
Cover me while I take a look at him.
Sure, Frank.
Reb squinted slightly as he looked at the trees, searching for any sign of danger. Frank hunkered down next to the dead man. He appeared to be a hard-faced gunman of the same sort that attacked them back at the canyon. In fact, Frank considered it pretty likely that this man was part of the same gang.
Ever see him before?
Me? Why would I have seen him?
I don't know. There's no telling who you might run into out here on the frontier.
Reb looked down at the dead man.
Well, I don't reckon I've ever laid eyes on him until just now. Unless he was one of those hombres I was shooting at earlier at the canyon. I never saw any of them close up.
All right. Let's take a gander at the others.
It quickly became obvious that the other two dead men were the same sort of hard cases. If these men had been part of the gang with the Gatling gun, they were getting whittled down in a hurry. Frank looked toward the far end of the valley at a big rock that sat there, then considered the positions of the dead men.
Looks to me like somebody ambushed them. Put a few riflemen up on that rock and they'd have clear shots back up the valley.
The rock that looks like some sort of animal, you mean?
Frank saw the resemblance now and nodded.
Yeah, I figured these men were riding toward that gap when the men on the rock opened up on them. They tried to scatter, but the odds were against them.
Where are the horses?
Got spooked by all the shooting and ran off, I expect. I wonder if this is all of them.
There might be more bodies, you mean?
No, there might be more men who escaped the ambush and are still out there somewhere. Still alive and ready to cause more trouble.
Who are they? Can you tell?
Palmer hesitated before answering. When he and Lundy heard the hoofbeats, he moved carefully to the edge of the trees so he could see who was coming, staying far enough back that he wasn't likely to be spotted. He could see well enough that he recognized one of the men. He hadn't seen Frank Morgan since they'd both been in Skagway the previous winter, but it would be hard to forget that son of a bitch. Lundy was already upset about the possibility of Morgan being mixed up in this, and even though the outlaw was wounded, Palmer was going to need him.
Two men. Yeah, I don't know him.
Well, it was half a lie anyway. He had never seen the gent who dressed like some Wild West show cowboy, which meant it was a half-truth, too.
Stay away from that horse, damn you.
He watched as Morgan and the other man took a closer look at the dead animal. What was left of the loot Palmer had brought with him when he and Yelmo Hopkins fled from Skagway was still in the saddlebags, and he didn't want to lose it.
What'd you say?
Nothing.
He wanted Lundy to shut up. Right now, they couldn't afford to draw Morgan's attention. Lundy was still too weak to be of any use in a gunfight.
Just be quiet, all right? Let them go on their way.
They got horses. We need horses.
And we'll get them. Tonight, when you're feeling better, we'll find their camp, kill them, and take the horses so we can get after that other bunch.
He had cleaned the wound in Lundy's side, which started the bullet holes bleeding again. So he'd had to stop the bleeding before tightly wrapping strips of cloth cut from his own shirt around Lundy's torso as makeshift bandages. Now Lundy needed to rest for a while before he started moving around much.
What if we can't find their camp?
We'll find it all right. Don't worry about that.
Oh, I wish we had one of those Gatling guns. Wouldn't have to worry about anything then.
Palmer wished he had one of the rapid firers, too. He would have gladly cut Frank Morgan and that other man into little pieces if he did. But the Gatlings were gone. God knows where, he thought. And the only weapon he had other than a knife was his cunning. To his great relief, Morgan and the other man mounted up without searching the saddlebags on the dead horse. An ugly smile tugged at Palmer's mouth. Morgan was probably helping Stevens trying to recover the money Soapy had stolen from him.
Dumb son of a bitch didn't have any idea how close he was to that loot.
Instead of heading east, as Palmer expected them to, Morgan and the other man turned around and rode west, back up the valley in the direction they had come from. They must have left the old-timer behind and were going back to get him now, Palmer figured. In the long run, it wouldn't really matter.
You just take it easy now, Owen. We'll make our move tonight.
Good. I want to get that gold back.
We'll get it back. This thing is a long way from over.
Can you tell who they are?
A woman and an old man.
Joseph peered around the edge of one of the rocks where he and Charlotte had hidden with the pack mules.
I've never seen them before.
What about the two men who left?
Strangers.
His nerves were pulled as tight as a barbed wire fence. The two people who sat their horses out there in the open didn't look particularly dangerous, but it was difficult to tell about such things. Joseph was acutely aware that the four Gatling guns were loaded on the mules behind him. If anything happened to those guns, the rebellion was probably doomed to failure. Joseph wished that Mirabeau and the others hadn't ridden off and left him and Charlotte responsible for the safety of the weapons. The two men who rode off earlier left in the direction of Wolverine Rock. They might run into Mirabeau's party. Joseph listened for the sound of more shots, but didn't hear any. Two men wouldn't be any match for Mirabeau and the others, he told himself. Everything would be all right. All he and Charlotte had to do was be patient, and hope that none of the mules decided to let out a loud bray. If that happened, the old man and the woman were bound to ride over to the boulders and investigate. Joseph's hands sweat on the Winchester he clutched as he considered that possibility. One by one, he wiped them off on his trousers.
Maybe I'm not cut out to be a revolutionary after all.
Frank was relieved when he and Reb came in sight of Salty and Meg. He hadn't heard any more shooting and figured they were all right, but it was always good to see that with his own eyes.
Any problems?
Nary one. What'd you two find up yonder?
Three dead men.
Any idea who they were?
Not really, but from the looks of them, I figure it's likely they were part of the same bunch that attacked us earlier.
Palmer's bunch, you mean?
I doubt if Palmer's the leader of the gang. I think he probably just joined up because he knew some of them.
I'm just glad he wasn't one of them corpses you found. I'd like to see to it my own self that the varmint gets what's coming to it.
You sound a mite bloodthirsty, amigo.
You'd be bloodthirsty, too, if a bunch of polecats stole everything you had and dang near ruined you.
I suppose you're right about that.
What do we do now?
This doesn't really change anything. Palmer's still somewhere ahead of us, as far as we know. We stay on his trail.
With that settled, the four of them set out again. By late afternoon, they had passed the spot where the three dead men lay and ridden past the giant boulder that was shaped something like the head of a predatory animal. Frank kept a close eye on the rock as they approached it. If it had been used for an ambush once, it could be again, he reasoned. But nothing happened. He called a halt when they were past the rock.
Salty, let's go take a look around over there and see if we can find any tracks. I'd like to know how many bushwhackers there were.
Good idea. We're liable to run into the varmints ourselves sooner or later. That's what I was thinking.
He didn't mind leaving Meg with Reb Russell this time, since he and Salty would be close by. But it didn't turn out quite the way Frank expected.
Meg and I will ride along with you, Frank. I'd sort of like to know the odds we might be facing, too.
Frank didn't object. The four of them scouted around behind the huge boulder until Frank spied some hoof prints. He dismounted and hunkered on his heels to study the marks on the ground.
Looks like half a dozen riders. One man stayed here to hold the horses.
He looked up at the rugged rock looming above them.
I figured the rest climbed up there and waited for those dead men to come in range.
You reckon anybody escaped that ambush?
I don't know. They could have, I suppose.
What I can't figure out is who this bunch is. They ain't the hombres who had the Gatling gun with them. That gang is the bunch that got bushwhacked.
Maybe the ambushers stole the Gatling gun. That could have been the reason for the ambush in the first place.
Frank considered the theory and nodded slowly.
Yeah, it could have happened like that. The only way to find out is to keep trailing them.
Why do you care about the Gatling gun? I thought you were just after this fella Palmer who helped steal Salty's money.
I don't know how they plan to use the Gatling gun, but it can't be anything good. I don't want to see a bunch of innocent blood spilled if there's anything I can do about it.
Well, that's sort of an odd way for a notorious gunfighter to feel, ain't it?
Frank regarded Reb coolly.
So you do know who I am?
I recognize the name. Shoot, anybody who's lived in the West for very long has heard of Frank Morgan. To tell you the truth, if anybody had asked me before today, I would have said it was likely you were dead by now.
Not hardly.
Yeah, I can see that. I don't mean any offense, Frank. It's just that gunfighters are usually pretty good at killing.
I don't care what you heard about me. I've never killed anybody who wasn't trying to kill me or somebody else who didn't deserve it. I'm not a hired gun and never have been, no matter what the law thinks of me.
Fine. Like I said, I meant no offense. I just didn't know. Now I do.
That's right. You do.
Salty tried to change the subject.
I don't see no blood on the ground or up on that rock. I reckon none of the bushwhackers got winged.
Those fellas tried to scatter before they were gunned down. They may not have gotten any shots off of their own.
That's just plain murder.
Sure is.
And those are the people we're trailing now. But I don't understand. If Palmer was with the men who were ambushed, he wouldn't be with this gang now. So where is he?
He's not here. Maybe he's trailing the same bunch we are.
Which would put us on the same side?
Nope. There ain't but two sides. Us and everybody else. We got no friends out here.
Frank couldn't argue with that. He had a feeling that whoever they might run into between here and Calgary would just as soon see them all dead. They passed through the last of the mountains into the foothills and made camp with a small, guarded fire so as not to attract attention. While they were eating supper, Frank indulged his curiosity.
Reb, you sound like you're from Virginia. Is that right?
The young man shook his head.
No, but my ma and pa were, and they raised me, of course. My pa had a farm near a little place in Virginia called Culpeper, not far from Bull Run. He fought in the war, fought all over the place, in fact, and when it was finally over and he got back home, he found that the farm was ruined. The Yanks had burned down everything and tore up the fields. He might have tried to rebuild the place, but some carpetbagger judge took the land away from him on account of taxes.
That happened a lot. Same thing went on in Texas, where I'm from.
I know. It was all over the Confederacy, I reckon. Anyway, my pa had himself a sweetheart, a gal who lived on one of the farms close by, and when he decided to leave Virginia and light out for some place where he could make a fresh start, he asked her to marry him and come with him. Her daddy didn't like the idea, but they ran off and got hitched anyway.
That's very romantic.
Maybe so, but it was a hard life for him, for a while anyway. They wound up in Arkansas and eventually moved on to Texas. Settled in a place called Cross Plains.
I've been there.
That's where I was born. I saw plenty of carpetbaggers there while I was growing up, but Pa said it wasn't as bad as it was back in Virginia. He worked on a ranch and saved up his money until he could afford a place of his own. I was riding a horse before I could walk, so naturally I helped him out as much as I could. Had a handful of little brothers who pitched in too as soon as they were old enough. We got by, more than that, really. The Russell spread wound up being one of the best ranches in that part of Texas.
That's a nice story. I'm glad your mother and father finally had a happy ending.
Yeah. When they didn't really need me around anymore, I decided to do some traveling. I was always a mite fiddle-footed. That's how I wound up going around to all the rodeos.
Reb Russell clearly didn't mind the sound of his own voice, Frank mused. But the talkative young man seemed friendly enough. The problem was that Frank's instincts still told him that Reb was lying about something, or at least not telling the whole truth. But when he tried to figure out how Reb might be connected to that Gatling gun, or to Joe Palmer for that matter, he couldn't make the pieces of the picture fit. He would just stay on his guard, he decided. He would be doing that anyway, as a matter of habit.
Meg and Reb, why don't you two turn in? Salty and I'll take turns standing watch.
You really think we need to do that?
You saw those bodies back there. This can be dangerous country.
Yeah, I reckon you're right about that. I can take my turn.
Salty and I can handle it.
You'd get more sleep if you let me help out. That is, unless you don't trust me, Frank.
Nobody said that. You trust Reb, don't you, Frank?
He hasn't given me any reason not to.
We can share a turn.
Reb smiled in the fading light of the fire.
I never turn down the company of a pretty gal.
Frank was uneasy about the arrangement, but he didn't want to press the issue.
All right. I'll stand the first watch, Salty the middle one, and the two of you can finish out the night. That agreeable to everybody?
The others all nodded.
Better roll up in your blankets and get some sleep then.
Frank reached for the coffee pot.
I'll just finish off this Arbuckles.
If it hadn't been for the faint smell of wood smoke lingering in the air, Palmer might have missed the camp. He was alert for that very thing, though, and when he caught a whiff of the smoke, he followed it to a long, low ridge. Owen Lundy limped along behind him, grunting now and then from the pain in his wounded side. It had been a long walk out of the mountains from the spot of the ambush. They'd had to hide once when a group of riders too large for them to attack rode past, heading west. A short time later, what could have been the same bunch rode past again, this time going east. Now, Palmer put a hand on Lundy's arm to stop him.
I smell a campfire. Or what's left of one, anyway?
His eyes searched the darkness along the base of the ridge for flames, but didn't see any. The fire must have burned down to embers. It might have gone out entirely by now, even with the faint scent of smoke lingering in the air.
If it's the bunch that rode past us earlier, there are too many of them. We can't jump them.
Maybe it's Morgan and the old man.
The shape I'm in, the two of us ain't any match for Frank Morgan.
Palmer was afraid Lundy was right about that. Morgan was hell on wheels, all by himself. Throw in the old-timer Stevens, the young woman, and the kid Palmer didn't know, and those odds were just too blasted steep. Unless they could split the group up somehow. At least he and Lundy were well-armed again. Palmer had scavenged weapons and ammunition from the members of Lundy's gang who had been killed in the ambush. He had a rifle and two pistols, and so did Lundy. If it came to a fight, they wouldn't be lacking for firepower. Most of the night was already gone. It wouldn't be long until morning. The two men had trudged along for hours in the darkness, guided only by light from the moon and stars. That was enough to keep them on the trail. Palmer studied the situation for long minutes.
I'm gonna get above them on that ridge. You'll draw Morgan out, Owen.
Palmer halfway expected Lundy to argue with him, but he must have been too tired and hurt to care about such things now.
All right. How do I do that?
You see those dark shapes there at the base of the bluff? Those are their horses. I think their camp is there too, just to the right.
Lundy squinted into the shadows.
All right. I see him.
Palmer didn't know whether Lundy really saw the camp or not. But that didn't matter, as long as he aimed in the right direction. Palmer knew Morgan and the others were there. There weren't enough horses for it to be the larger group camped here.
You give me time to get up on the ridge above them. Then you open fire on the camp, but aim high. We don't want to kill any of the horses. We may need them all.
What are you gonna do?
Morgan will come out to see what's going on. I'll ambush him if I can, but if I can't get a shot at him, I'll slide down the ridge and grab the horses for us. They can't come after us if they're on foot.
Yeah, that sounds like it'll work.
The pain really did have his mind muddled, Palmer thought. He saw several big holes in the plan, but Lundy didn't seem suspicious. Some part of Lundy's mind must have worked again for a second.
You'll come back around and get me, right?
Sure. And we'll go after those sons of bitches who stole our gold.
Yeah. Yeah, those sons of bitches.
Lundy swayed slightly on his feet. Palmer put the back of his hand against Lundy's cheek. The outlaw was burning up with fever.
What are you doing?
Checking to see if you have a fever. You're fine, Owen. Must not be any infection from that bullet hole.
Good. I always was a quick healer.
Not this time, Palmer thought. Lundy was on his last legs. He might not make it even a few more hours until dawn. This was the best chance to get a little more use out of him and then leave him behind to his fate. Palmer knew that if he waited much longer, Lundy wasn't going to be any good to him.
All right. There's some rocks right over there. We'll get you forded up in them.
Frank was instantly alert when the sound of the shot jerked him out of slumber. He came out of his bedroll, reaching for the Winchester on the ground beside it.
Everybody down! Stay down!
He was already on one knee. He brought the rifle to his shoulder as he spotted a muzzle flash a couple of hundred yards away. The Winchester already had a round in its chamber. Frank worked the lever and threw himself forward, expecting return fire. He got it, but the shots continued to go high, smacking into the bluff.
Who in tarnation you reckon that is?
Don't know. Are you all right?
Yeah, other than having my sleep disturbed.
Meg, how about you? Are you hit?
Reb and I are both fine, Frank.
Salty, we're gonna try to flush that varmint out. You go left and I'll go right.
You bet. I'm getting so dang frustrated I'm just itching to shoot somebody.
Let's take him alive if we can. I'd like to find out who he is and why he wants us dead.
Shoot. Seems like everybody wants us dead these days.
Frank heard the comment. It brought a grim smile to his mouth. Salty was right. It seemed as if everyone they had encountered in Canada was an enemy, with the lone exception of Reb Russell. And Frank wasn't 100% sure about him yet. On hands and knees, Frank moved away from the camp to the right. When he reached an area of taller grass, he came up into a crouching run, but still stayed as low as he could. As Frank circled toward the bushwhacker's position, something began to nag at him. The light from the moon and stars was too dim for accurate shooting, but even so, it seemed that all the shots had been going too high for this to be a real ambush. As soon as that thought crossed his mind, he stopped short and started to turn back. The shots were nothing but decoys, he realized, designed to draw him away from the camp. He swung around.
Oh!
Frank hit the ground, and that was the last thing he knew for a while. Joe Palmer was pretty sure the man he had just taken a shot at was Frank Morgan. His heart leapt as he saw Morgan fall.
Take that, gunfighter. Not such a big man now, are you?
Palmer didn't waste any time gloating. He started down the slope, which was steep enough that part of the time he was bounding and the other part he was sliding. The kid and the blonde were still at the camp. They must have heard the shot from the top of the bluff, and they probably heard Palmer making his way down the ridge, so he was expecting trouble. He wasn't going to give them a chance to get oriented. He aimed one of his revolvers in the direction where he last saw them. He had barely reached level ground when a figure loomed up in front of him. The night was too dark for him to tell which one it was. Since he still had the empty gun in his hand, he lashed out with it. At the same time, a gun went off practically in his face. Burning bits of powder stung his left cheek. He felt a tearing pain in that ear, as if somebody had just tried to rip it off his head. The figure he hit with the pistol lay at his feet. Palmer didn't get any respite, though. Somebody tackled him from behind. They both went to the ground. As he rolled in the dirt, wrestling with his attacker, Palmer's hands told him he was fighting with the woman. He had dropped the empty pistol and the rifle when she knocked him down, but that meant he had both hands free. He landed a punch to her jaw. Her head bounced against the ground, and she went limp. Palmer knew he had no time to waste. The way Morgan had gone down, he hoped the gunfighter was dead. But it was possible that Morgan was just wounded, and the old man was still unaccounted for, too. Palmer scrambled to his feet. An idea occurred to him as he did so. He leaned down, and working by feel, he pulled the blonde's belt from the trousers she wore and rolled her onto her stomach while she was still stunned and helpless. He pulled her arms behind her back and used the belt to bind her wrists together.
Easy, easy now. The trouble's all over.
The horses were picketed. He grabbed a blanket and saddle and threw them on one of the mounts, hurriedly cinching the saddle in place. He risked taking long enough to saddle one of the other horses. The blonde was coming around.
Damn you! Put me down, you polecat!
Ignoring the burning pain in his wounded ear, Palmer scooped her up and put her on one of the saddled horses.
Don't cause any fuss or I'll kill you!
She tried to kick him. Palmer dodged it and reached up to punch her in the belly. As the woman bent over, he used one of the picket ropes to tie her already bound wrists to the saddle horn.
That'll hold you. Now shut up!
Now if she didn't cooperate, she would fall off the horse and probably get dragged to death. So if she knew what was good for her, she would do what she was told.
I gotta get out of here.
All too aware that he was working against time, Palmer slung some supplies onto the pack animals, then jerked the other ropes loose, freeing the rest of the horses. Where was the old man? That question was answered just as Palmer picked up his rifle. Palmer swung around. Stephen, who had reared up in the grass after crawling back to the camp, went over backward as at least one of the bullets ripped into him. Palmer didn't waste any more time. He leapt onto the other saddled horse, grabbed the reins of the horse carrying the blonde, and kicked his mount into a gallop. Palmer left the camp and his enemies behind him. He knew all three of the men were hurt, but he didn't know how badly. All of them might be dead. He hoped fervently that was the case. But even if they weren't, they were set afoot now, while he had horses, supplies, guns, and a hostage if he needed one. Best of all, if he could get his hands on those chests of gold, now he wouldn't have to split that fortune with anybody. A grin stretched across Palmer's face as he galloped through the night. Things were finally starting to go his way again. Gently, Frank placed Salty on top of one of the bedrolls and then put some more wood on the ashes of the burned-down fire. He kindled a small blaze so he'd have enough light to see what he was doing. It would have been good to clean the wound with whiskey or some other disinfectant, but Frank didn't have anything like that on hand. Instead, he drew his knife from its sheath and heated the blade in the flames until it glowed red from the heat. He hated to do this, but he didn't want the bullet crease in Salty's side to fester. Without hesitation, he pressed the red-hot knife to the wound.
Hold on, Salty. Hold on.
Even unconscious, Salty tried to arch up off the ground. But Frank's other hand held him down, even as Frank felt his own head wound throb. Salty sagged back when Frank took the knife away.
You'll be all right now, once you rest.
Frank stood up and went back over to where Reb stood, next to the other man who had showed up out of nowhere, ready to gun them down.
Is this one still alive?
Not sure. I think so.
How's that knot on your head?
Nutty.
Frank knelt and took hold of the man's shoulders to roll him onto his back. His eyes fluttered open. The whole front of his shirt was sodden with blood. The thatch of white hair on his head was wildly askew.
What's your name, hombre?
Frank could tell that the man didn't have long to live, and he wanted to find out as much as he could.
Good hell!
Fine, I just thought you'd like to have your name on the marker we'll put up after we bury you.
Oh, damn you! You killed me!
You come into a place with a gun in your hand and start blazing away, folks is gonna shoot back at you. You look like you've been around long enough to know that.
It's Lundy. Owen Lundy.
Frank didn't recognize the name, but he hadn't heard of every owl hoot west of the Mississippi either.
You said something about Joe Palmer.
He was supposed to come back for me after he stole the horses.
But he rode off and left you behind, didn't he?
I was already wounded. Guess he thought I couldn't keep up. What he really wanted was to go after that gold all for himself.
Your gold?
Yeah. The bastards stole it back from us.
The wheels of Frank's brain turned rapidly as he made connections between the facts he knew and the things he had guessed.
They paid you in gold for the Gatling gun you smuggled in from the States, then double-crossed you.
Yeah, but it was guns for Gatling guns.
Frank's jaw tightened. One Gatling gun could do a hell of a lot of damage. Four could wipe out a small town.
Who are they? Who has the guns?
Bunch of breeds. Half-breeds.
Métis.
Frank didn't look around. Didn't waste time right now worrying how come this rodeo cowboy knew about the mixed bloods who had tried twice to rise in rebellion against the Canadian government.
Yeah. Didn't trust them. Didn't really think they'd bushwhack us, though. Sons of bitches.
So Palmer's going after him?
I reckon. He wants that gold. Never should have trusted him either. Somebody always double crosses.
The whole thing was a lot clearer now. The theories that Frank put together concerning the Gatling guns had been confirmed. Somewhere out there in the night, a group of Métis revolutionaries had four Gatling guns and a couple of chests full of gold. There was no telling what kind of hell they meant to raise with those guns, but it couldn't be anything good. Joe Palmer was trailing them, intent on getting his hands on that gold. But Palmer wasn't alone. He had Meg with him as a prisoner and a hostage if he needed one. Frank and Reb stood in their meager camp with a wounded Salty and no horses. Any way you looked at it, they held a bad hand.
You told him we'd bury him.
I lied.
Frank straightened from kneeling next to Lundy's body. The sky was light enough now that they could see.
I don't like doing that, especially to a dying man. But I wanted to know what was going on here so we could figure out what to do next.
What can we do next? We don't have any horses.
That's true. But there's one thing I can take care of.
Frank faced Reb and gave him a cool, level stare.
Just who the hell are you anyway?
Joseph Murat was exhausted, but he had no choice except to keep up as the group of riders made its way eastward toward the dawn. He glanced over at his sister. Charlotte swayed wearily in the saddle. She was just as tired as he was. Anton Mirabeau kept pushing them through the foothills, though. There was no longer any doubt who was in charge here. Mirabeau had shoved Joseph aside as the leader of the rebellion. Joseph had been relieved when Mirabeau and a couple of the other men arrived to rendezvous with him in Charlotte and lead them back to join the others. But in weak moments, he was no longer so sure it was a good thing.
Oh, when can we rest, Anton? We've been riding all night.
Soon.
We can't be sure that Lundy and all of his men are dead. I want to be well ahead of them before we start. There are too few of us to take unnecessary chances.
That was true, Joseph thought. Only 8 of them remained to protect the gold and transport the Gatling guns to Calgary. The gold was important, Joseph supposed, but the guns were everything. Without them, the plan would fail. And if the plan failed, the rebellion would fall apart before it ever truly began. They were counting on the conflagration they would ignite with the Gatlings to spread quickly across the entire western half of Canada. Mirabeau was true to his word. He called a halt a short time later, next to a creek that twisted and turned through a narrow gap between a couple of hills.
We'll rest here for a couple of hours. Gabriel, ride up to the top of that hill and keep an eye on the trail behind us. If you see anyone following us, let me know immediately. The rest of you unsaddle your horses. We'll fill up all our canteens before we push on, too.
Joseph turned to Charlotte as he swung down from his saddle.
I'll take care of your horse.
No, I can do it.
She leaned tiredly against the horse's flank.
Just let me rest for a moment first.
Joseph took hold of her shoulders and gently moved her aside.
Go, sit down somewhere. I can handle this.
Well, if you are sure.
I'm sure.
Mirabeau shouldered him aside.
Tend to your own horse, Joseph. I'll take care of Charlotte and her mount.
Anger flared inside Joseph, and for once he was too tired to suppress it for the good of their shared cause.
You'll do no such thing. In fact, I think you should stay away from Charlotte.
Mirabeau frowned at him in surprise.
What are you saying? She and I are going to be married.
I don't think so. I can no longer give my blessing to such a union.
Joseph, what are you saying? You know that Anton and I have an understanding?
Well, perhaps you shouldn't. I don't think he's the right man for you, Charlotte.
You're tired and not thinking straight, my friend. These are personal matters and should not be discussed in public.
Public?
Joseph waved an arm at their surroundings.
We're in the middle of the wilderness. There probably aren't 50 people within 100 miles of here.
Mirabeau's eyes narrowed and glanced toward the other men. Joseph understood then. Mirabeau didn't want to appear weak in front of them, now that he had taken over command of the group. It was a matter of honor and pride.
We will talk about this later, once we have finished our mission.
You mean our attack on the Northwest Mounted Police Barracks at Calgary?
He might as well be blunt about it, Joseph thought. Their actions would amount to a declaration of war against the Crown. It was likely none of them would survive, except for Charlotte. Joseph didn't intend to let her anywhere near the scene of the attack. So this argument with Mirabeau might well be pointless. He should have held his tongue. But it was too late for that now. He realized Mirabeau was giving him an odd look. Joseph suddenly felt a chill go down his back. Something else was going on here. Something he didn't even know about.
I've been meaning to talk to you about that. I don't think it would be a good idea to attack the Mounties.
You're afraid of them?
Not at all. But that's what the Crown would expect us to do. We need to do something to surprise them. Something that will leave no doubt as to how serious we are about winning freedom for our people.
What are you talking about, Anton?
In a few days, they're going to be holding a competition in Calgary for the cowboys who work on the ranches. A rodeo, they call it. Hundreds of people will be there, and no one will be expecting trouble.
A feeling of horror washed through Joseph as his eyes widened in amazement.
You can't mean that.
They're going to set up those Gatling guns and wipe out the crowd before anyone knows what's happening. Then the damned English will have no choice but to give us what we want.
Reb Russell gave Frank a friendly smile in the strengthening dawn light.
What are you talking about, Frank? I told you who I am. Reb Russell, just a cowpoke from Texas heading for the rodeo.
A cowpoke who knows about the Métis and their troubles with the Canadian government?
It was in all the papers. How do you know about it?
Reb had a point there, Frank supposed. It was true that he had read newspaper stories about the previous rebellions up here north of the border. That wasn't enough to get rid of all Frank's suspicions, though.
That was a fast draw you made a few minutes ago.
I have a lot of time to practice, and I won't lie to you. I've run into my share of trouble in my time. Too many hombres still seem to think the best way to settle an argument is with a gun.
Funny, I haven't heard of you then.
I've been lucky. I never had to kill anybody until I came up here to Canada. Maybe I should have stayed home.
He grew more serious as he hooked his thumbs in his gun belt.
Look, Frank, if you and me are gonna have a problem here...
No problem. Just forget I said anything, Reb. With everything that's happened, I'm just naturally a mite leery, I guess.
Well, yeah, I can understand that. I'm glad you understand that you and I are on the same side, Frank. Seems to me that right now, you and me are all we got.
And Salty.
Yeah, sure, Salty too, when he gets back on his feet.
Frank looked around for his hat. He found it, picked it up, and put it on.
I'm gonna take a look around. Maybe some of those horses didn't run off too far. If we can round up even one or two of them, it'll help.
You bet it will. We're going after Meg, aren't we?
Of course we are. And the sooner we get on Palmer's trail, the better. Take care of Salty, will you?
Sure. If he wakes up and needs anything, I'll be right here.
Reb was right about one thing. Frank had no choice but to trust him. They would have to work together if they were going to get out of here and rescue Meg. As he walked on, looking for the horses, Frank tried not to think about the fact that Meg was Palmer's prisoner. He knew she was good at taking care of herself, and he had told himself that she would be all right until they could catch up to her and her captor. If she wasn't, he would kill Palmer himself, even if it took him the rest of his life to track the man down.
Damn.
A feeling of frustration grew stronger in Frank as he continued to search without finding any of the horses. Palmer might have taken several of the animals with him, but he couldn't have led all of them away. Some of them had bolted in panic from all the shooting after Palmer turned them loose. They ought to still be around here somewhere. But he didn't see any, and when he stopped and turned around to scan the hills around him, he realized that he was out of sight of the camp, too. He didn't want to go too much farther. Like most Westerners, he wasn't used to walking when he could ride. His feet already hurt. Disgusted, he turned around and started back toward the camp. He could search again later. In the meantime, it was possible that some of the horses would wander up on their own and save him from having to look for them. When he reached the camp, he saw Salty was awake and propped up against a log. Reb knelt beside him, holding a canteen. The young man looked back over his shoulder at Frank.
Any luck?
Nope.
I was afraid that was what you were gonna say when you didn't bring any of the horses back with you.
Frank sat down on the log.
How are you feeling, Salty?
Like I've been shot. Hurts like Hades, too. How bad am I hit, Frank? Am I gonna die?
Not from that bullet crease in your side. You're weak because you lost some blood, but you'll be all right.
Salty took the canteen from Reb.
I sure wish I had a drink right about now. Danged if I don't.
Reckon that'll have to wait until we get back to civilization.
Civilization? Bah! Civilization full of crooked varmints like Palmer and fiendish contraptions like them devil guns and a bunch of skunks who ain't got nothing better to do than stir up a whole heap of trouble. Why, for a nickel, I'd chuck the whole blame thing and go live in a cave somewheres like a danged old hermit.
Then you'd never get a drink.
Salty scratched at his beard.
Well, that's true. I reckon there's a few good things about civilization, but mighty dang few.
We need to get some breakfast going.
I'll handle that.
Reb patted Salty on the shoulder.
You just sit there and rest, old-timer.
Reb bustled off to gather more wood and prepare a meal.
The boy tells me Palmer ran off with Meg. Is that true, Frank?
I'm afraid so.
Dadgummit! You gotta get after him. You and Reb just leave me here and get on the trail. I'll be all right. I can take care of myself.
I'm sure you can, but we don't have any horses.
Well, then you're just gonna have to go after him on foot. You can't leave Meg in that bastard's hands, Frank. You just can't.
I'm not going to. But we'll never catch up on foot. We gotta find some horses somewhere. Maybe there's a trapper's cabin or a little ranch around here. I'll have a look again later.
I don't like it. That son of a bitch could be doing most anything.
I know. That's why I'm trying not to think about it right now until I can actually do something about it.
One thing we can count on, old Meg ain't gonna cooperate with him. If there's one thing that gal knows how to do, it's put up her fight.
Damn it, stop fighting! I don't want to hurt you!
Son of a bitch! Let go of me!
Blast it, I'm gonna knock you out if you don't stop fighting!
Try it, you bastard!
Palmer let go of her left wrist and tried to use his right hand to clout her on the jaw. She was too fast for him, though. Her hand shot up. Her arm blocked his punch, and she reached across to grab his wounded ear and give it a vicious twist.
Yeah!
He hurt so bad that his grip on her loosened. She twisted away from him and tried to get up so she could run again. He reached out, grabbed a leg, and yanked it out from under her, which sent her plunging face first into the dirt. Palmer tried not to think about how much his ear hurt or how he could feel the hot, wet trickle of blood down the side of his face. He scrambled on top of her again, and this time, since she was face down, she couldn't muster as much of a fight. He got hold of an arm and twisted it behind her. He put his other hand on the back of her neck and held her down.
I ought to kill you, you little bitch!
Go ahead! Go ahead, damn you!
Not hardly.
He kept her arm trapped behind her and slid his other arm around her neck, tightening it into a chokehold that cut off her air. After a minute, he got his legs underneath him and heaved to his feet, dragging her up with him. He marched her back toward the horses. When they got there, Palmer threw her on the ground so hard that she rolled over a couple of times. She lay there, struggling to catch her breath, as she lifted her head and glared up at him. Palmer's gun had stayed in its holster despite the ruckus. He drew the weapon now and pointed it at the blonde.
Now listen to me. I don't want to hurt you, but I will if I have to. There's a lot more at stake here than just you.
What are you talking about?
Gold. And plenty of it. Does that interest you?
Not nearly as much as killing you would.
Yeah, well, that's not going to happen, so you might as well forget about it. But if you cooperate with me, you might come out ahead on this deal.
You're trying to buy me off?
I'd rather do that than shoot you. Better gold than lead, right?
She stared at him for a long moment.
What's to stop me from telling you I'll cooperate and then double-crossing you?
The fact that you know I'll kill you if you try something like that. And the fact that your hands are going to be tied most of the time. But I can take it a little easier on you if you promise you won't try getting away.
She appeared to consider what he was saying.
You'll stay away from me? You won't lay a hand on me?
Not like that, if that's the way you want it. You're pretty good looking, but to tell you the truth, I'm more interested in that gold than anything you've got.
She pushed herself up into a sitting position.
You're a vile son of a bitch.
And the more you remember that, the better off we'll both be.
All right. I'll cooperate. For now.
Good. You can get up, build a fire, and fix us some coffee and something to eat. I remember you from that bunch of mail-order brides in Skagway, but I don't recall your name.
She got up and brushed herself off.
It's Meg.
All right, Meg. Get to work. You play along with me and you'll come out of this all right. Maybe better than all right.
You know Frank's going to come after you and kill you, don't you?
Frank Morgan? I don't think so. Morgan's dead. I shot him myself and saw him go down. So were the other two who were with you. It's just you and me now, Meg. And that's the way it's gonna be from now on.
After another futile search for the horses, Frank, Salty, and Reb set out on foot. Frank and Reb slung packs of supplies on their backs, Salty clutching a pine branch Frank had cut and shaped into a walking stick. Frank wrapped more bandages around the old-timer's midsection, binding the dressing over the wound in place as tightly as he could.
It's so tight I can't hardly breathe, but I can move around without it hurting too bad.
As long as it doesn't start bleeding again, you ought to be all right.
I ain't worried about a little blood, as long as there ain't too much of it.
Everyone lay ahead of them now. Palmer, Meg, and the Métis revolutionaries who had both the gold and the Gatling guns in their possession. At least, everyone that they knew of, Frank corrected himself, as he thought about their situation. It might be a smart idea to keep an eye on their back trail, anyway. Out here on the frontier, you couldn't ever be sure about who might be coming up behind you. Around the middle of the afternoon, Frank spotted some hoofprints.
Hold up.
He pointed them out.
Are those our horses?
Not unless they found some friends. At least a dozen horses left those prints.
It was true. A large group of riders passed through here sometime in the past couple of days, moving south to north through the foothills and cutting across the path of Frank and his companions, who were headed east.
Who do you reckon they were? Them Middies, or however you say it?
Could be. But why would they be going north?
Frank tried to remember maps of Canada he had seen.
From here, there's not much in that direction except a big empty, all the way to Edmonton. We figured they were headed to Calgary.
We figured, but we don't know that for sure. Do you think we should follow these tracks?
Frank pondered the question for a long moment, before finally shaking his head.
I saw the hoof prints that the Métis horses left back there where they bushwhacked Lundy's gang. I don't think these were made by the same animals.
Salty snatched his hat off and looked as if he was going to slam it to the ground in disgust. But he must have decided not to, because picking it up would be difficult with those bandages wrapped so tightly around him.
You mean there's another bunch of varmints wandering around out here? For hell's sake! There weren't this many people in San Francisco the last time I was there.
Yeah, it's pretty crowded for the middle of nowhere. But these folks may not have anything to do with the ones we're after.
Wish they'd left a few of them horses behind. My feet ain't never gonna be the same. It's plumb unnatural for a man to have to walk so dang much, that's what it is.
I can't argue with you there, old-timer.
Come on. Whoever these fellas were, they're long gone.